nor regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be spending some time with Braden Langley from Langley Outdoors talking about Harmeet Dillon's trip to the range and the reaction that it received on social media, which was, in many cases, not great, as you may have seen. Harmeet Dillon went to the range, posted pictures of her target afterwards, was very proud of herself. Not bad, she said, for shooting. I believe it was at 10 yards. And, you know, I mean, listen, the grouping wasn't particularly tight. But rather than, some folks offered constructive criticism. Some folks, way to go. Glad that you were there. Keep shooting. Keep improving. But then there was quite a bit of, are you kidding me? You think you should be proud of that? A lot of naysayers, a lot of negativity. And coming from people who at least purported to be gun owners and Second Amendment supporters, you know, on the internet, nobody knows if you're a dog. So maybe these were gun control trolls, but it was not a great look. My colleague Tom Knighton wrote about this at the Bearing Arms. Carrie Sloan wrote about this at the Bearing Arms from a woman's perspective as well. And Braden and I have been talking offline about the reaction here and maybe sort of the a broader trend that we're seeing at least bubble up in some portions of the 2A community that is, I don't know how to define it, exclusionary, cliquish. Maybe Braden talked about you know, the purity tests that seem to be imposed and the problems that can result from that attitude, which may play very well in social media, but when it comes to actually protecting our right to keep your arms, I think it does more harm than good. Anyway, I thought it was a great conversation. Hopefully you will too. Take a look and a listen to the conversation with Braden Langley. Braden, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, man.
No, man, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, listen, I was off on a Monday. I didn't have a chance to write about Harmeet Dillon's trip to the range, which was yeah, definitely a topic for social media and for, you know, a lot of folks who pay attention to Second Amendment news and information. And Tom Knighton wrote a piece. Carrie Sloan wrote a piece for Bearing Arms. Carrie focusing more on the reaction that women specifically get when, you know, they're embracing their segment rights and being very public faced about it. Tom, though, I think wrote more generally about just this, you know, I mean, the criticism that Dillon got, not for going to the range, but because, you know, her grouping wasn't that tight. She was proud of herself. And it seemed like there were a lot of keyboard warriors who basically wanted to tell her, hey, you shouldn't be proud. You know, that wasn't a good job, right?
I'm more pro 2A than you are because my grouping's better.
Right. So
excellent. Excellent.
I was going to ask, you know, what was your reaction? But I think we just got your reaction, at least in a nutshell.
That's in a nutshell. Okay, so first of all, I think this is a conversation that needs to be had a lot more with a lot more people and a lot more parts of the community that we're in, right? You need people. This is one of the most fascinating things. Observing all the different political beliefs and ideologies and all the different approaches to things. The bottom line, it boils down, you need people. You can't do what you need to do without people. And if you run into this position where someone steps in and they're brave enough to publish something that they're already maybe a little bit anxious about, and your first, you see your fingers come through underneath the window, and the first thing you do is you slam the freaking window on their fingers. It's like, do you think they're going to post more? Do you think they're going to do it again? Do you think they're going to bring more people into it? Like, you need people. Stop punching people in the face for daring to step into your front yard. It's a pet peeve of mine, man. It's just like, oh my God, we need people. Stop it.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, how much of this do you think is the result of social media, right? Because I think that social media has become very exclusionary, right? We want to find our own little tribe. You're not allowed in our group. You can't sit at the cool kids table. To me, though, if you actually go to a range as a new shooter, I think you're far more likely to find people who are encouraging, who will say,
oh, yeah,
hey, here's a little tip for you. Hey, do you want to shoot my gun? I think it's a very different reaction than what you get in these online spaces.
Oh, I would agree with that. But the problem comes out. It's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Yes, it absolutely is that minority online, right? Because but it's a very, very loud minority. If you want a really good visceral reaction topic and a like example, it's kind of like the woke left and Democrats, right? Those are two different parties. They are two different entities. You have the Democrats who over here are like, you know, like I'm a little more moderate on this or a little bit more extreme on this than you are, but we're still within this realm, right? And then there's the freaking far lefties that are so far over here that are the loudest, and they browbeat everybody and they purity test everybody and like the easiest people to hate in the world. But again, it's poisoning the well of the entire organism, right? So if you have 10, 15 people out of 10,000, well, those 10, 15 people, if you're really mean to someone or you're very off-putting, they're going to remember you. They're not going to remember the other 1,900 or 19,000 people in the room. They're going to remember how you made them feel, not the whole room in general, right? I think there's something to that point. The online is a very consequence-free environment versus an individual area, like a range where there is absolute social reinforcement of, hey, you're being a dick. Like, stop being a dick. Right. I think there's something to that. I think the online space lends itself to a accountability free reaction to people versus real life examples of, honest to God, you're going to get a little bit of pushback if you treat someone like crap in real life, but you're not going to get it on the internet.
No, I mean, in fact, you know, on the internet, you're going to get engagement, you're going to get clicks, you're going to get attention, right? And, and that is the currency of social media. But again, you know, going back to what you said earlier, you know, we do need people as gun owners.
Yep.
We actually need non-gun owners on our side. We're not a majority in this country, right? The majority of American adults are not gun owners. Now, they may know.
Correct.
But if, you know, we're saying, okay, the only people we need are people who, are already, act like us and think like us and vote like us, we're toast. I mean, beyond
toast.
So, you know, we've got to continually be engaged in that outreach, not just to try to, you know, get people to the range, to get people to experience and exercise their Second Amendment rights, but to get people to understand, like, even if you don't own a gun, even if you don't go to the range, here's why this is a right that is worth fighting for. Here's why this is something mm-hmm. that you should support, even if you're not exercising it right now.
Right. And going back to, see, it, this is the fun part about these conversations, because you kind of have a broad direction you're going, but you can start to kind of like weave something together really nicely, right? So here's an example of what you just brought up, right? You need people is what I said earlier on. We brought that back into the conversation. And now you look at your Harmeet Dhillon example, okay? Harmeet Dhillon is one of the DOJ champions for the 2A currently, actively. Mm-hmm. And I will go to the mat with anybody on that. You can go down the sarcastic route of most, like this one of my favorite things in the world, most 2A president administration in history. Okay, fine. I get it. Is everything perfect? No, everything's not perfect. But you cannot argue the fact that Harmeet Dhillon has brought forward pressure against Illinois' assault weapon bans, has written or been taken part in the first ever SCOTUS amicus brief against gun control. She is going down the road of purifying voter registrations and suing all those other states, which are going to help you in the gun rights fight, right? Like, all of these things are active steps in the right direction, but Cam, she's shot outside the silhouette. So, I mean, I'm not sure if we can really value what her opinion is. It really is frustrating at certain points.
It is. And I mean, you talk about the purity test. I think we see that again with DOJ, right? I mean, am I happy that DOJ continues to defend federal gun laws? No.
Nope.
I'm happy
not
that
at
they
all.
Are, you know, saying that the NFA imposes a modest burden on the exercise of the Second Amendment? Absolutely not.
Nope.
But while that's happening, you're right. Harmeet Dhillon is doing important and historic work. You know, you mentioned some of the things that she's doing. That she's suing the LASD, Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, for delays in concealed carry permits.
There's one.
Virgin Islands government over their, you know, arbitrary and capricious licensing policy. The idea that you've got to let the police into your home to inspect your gun safe to make sure that your guns are stored properly. right? These are all historic actions. So, you know, and again, in politics, if you demand purity, guess what? You lose, right?
Look at the look at Joe Biden's administration. Look at the progressives right now.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you've got to be, to me, in order to be a successful in the political arena, you've got to accept incrementalism. You've got to accept imperfection, right? Now, you can still push for more. That's obviously a part of it. But recognize that things are not going to be perfect. You're never going to have somebody that's 100% with you, whether it's an administration or a particular politician. There's always going to be some room for disagreement, some area where you say, you need to be doing something better. But you don't shove them aside. You don't, you know, toss them in the trash. And I think, you know, when it comes to Dylan particularly, I think it would be a terrible idea to leave her with the impression that, you know, gun owners are not supportive of the work that she's doing, that in fact, we're just a bunch of, to use your word, bunch of dicks, who, you know, I can't see a positive when it's staring us right in the face.
Well, and I think there's a very important caveat, because the keyboards just started clicking right now. We're not saying that gun owners are dicks, and we're not saying that 2A advocates are dicks. In a general hypothetical overall, take the gun world out of it. If someone bakes you a cake and you go, it's not the right color ice or flavor icing, I mean, like, you're not going to get another cake. It's not difficult. It's like, well, I just made this entire cake for you, and all you can complain about is the flavor of the icing. Like, what? Why would I do that again? And that's the principle I'm saying. Is the argument that's being put forward by a lot of 2A advocates and a lot of 2A organizations correct and aligned to our rights? Absolutely. There's no question on that, right? But we're not talking about right or wrong. We're talking about interactions and personability and people. Like, people aren't robots. People are soft, squishy little things. And when you have the personal interactions that are interacting with politics, that's where you're getting into a different realm. And I think that it's really important to bring all these people into the fold, not push them away. I think that's the whole point. And Harmeet Dylan, I mean, you're looking at something that we're in March right now. So what? 14 months of long of an administration. Yeah. Have there been downfalls and not perfect? Absolutely. Has there also been unprecedented moves forward? Absolutely. Suppressors just got removed from the tax schedule, which is opening up an entire new avenue of approach from an NFA infringement perspective. That was never there before. That wasn't possible without the One Big Beautiful Bill. And a lot of gun organizations were very involved in that. But honest to God, there sure was a whole lot really, really quickly of, I don't like this flavor of icing in that scenario. I mean, like, that's the whole point. It's like, I don't know. I'm not trying to ramble on it, and I'm not trying to bash anybody.
I get what you, and again, I think a lot of it comes back to the way we interact with each other online versus the way we interact with each other face to face. Right. And maybe the you know, I mean, now it's my turn to ramble here, because I wonder too if some of this is not, we're not victims of our own success, right? I mean, it's been what, 20 years since the Heller decision. You know, there is an entire generation of gun owners that have grown up understanding that the Second Amendment, you know, it does protect an individual right. Like, that's been a non-issue, right?
Right.
Some of us olds remember the pre-Heller days, right? And how far we've come. And so, you know, I think that it's pretty easy to get that myopic focus and say, well, yeah, we should be doing more. This isn't good enough. But if you've been around long enough, I think, you know, it's possible. And I think it's wise to have that perspective of, well, look how far we've come over the past two decades. If I go back even further, look how far we've come since the 1970s, when the goal of the gun control movement was to ban handguns. Right. That is off the table now. Even before Heller, that was a non-issue in the vast majority of the country.
It's politically off the table. It's politically off the table. Right.
But it was, I would argue, it was culturally off the table before.
That's what I mean. No one will accept that. Even Democrats.
That gun owners and Second Amendment advocates have done. Whether you like it or not, this is a long-term fight. In fact, this fight will never end.
Never.
And there are going to be wins and there are going to be losses. But I think that, you know, maybe it's the culture of immediate gratification. Maybe if it is, you know, again, a new generation of gun owners who maybe, and maybe even, you know, just new gun owners who don't really understand all the battles that have been fought over the previous decades. But I think in some sense it's short-sighted. And again, I don't want to paint with a broad brush. This is not every gun owner, just like it's not every gun owner who is on social media who is giving the Army Dillon a hard time. But as you say, those voices can be really loud, and 15 or 20 of these, you know, naysayers, the people who are constantly bitching and complaining, can drown out 1,500 folks who, who aren't saying those things.
And so I think what you just touched on, this is the part where we get, this is really, really important to me. This is a very important passion point for me. You just hit on something incredible. And if anyone's listening, please forward this part out, because we're about to have a real fun conversation. Incrementalism is how they took our rights from us to begin with. That since 1934 to current day, they have been on an incremental cutting away and death by a thousand cuts, over and over and over and over again. They started losing on federal. They went to state level. We started kicking their butts on state level, and we got even more federal. It's an incrementalism. It's a tug of war, and we are actively winning. I have been saying that for 5 years. We are actively in the process of winning. The fight is not over. The fight will continue to be. It's our responsibility to consistently defend our rights and be on guard for people who would do that again. But you have to understand, as these doors shut, they can't be opened again once the court nails them shut. They have to go a different road. It's not like they come back and do the exact same thing that a court already decided on. No, the Heller decision is permanent unless they come back with another SCOTUS, which overrules it, which is highly unlikely. Right. And the big thing that I want to drive into right here is we have so many 2A veterans and 2A fighters and 2A rights advocates that are in our space that have gone through the experience of what you're talking about, because I'm never going to discount somebody's experience ever. The people who we're talking about right now are the older generation of the rights fight, okay? You're talking about 45, 55, 65, 75. That generation of people, who is a very large chunk of the Second Amendment group, lived through the most extreme gun control pushes ever, like on record. So they have that in their formative years of going through that and fighting that. It's just like people who live in blue states. But the problem that presents itself is because those people live through that experience, that is their viewpoint, because that was what molded into them. And I'm not saying it's bad that they did. However, when you let cynicism of your experience take over versus guiding the next generation from your experience, you've allowed the negativity to permeate and dominate the experience versus using it as a guiding coalition force for the next generation. That's where women come in. That's where the next generation of young people come in. That's where all the different aspects and demographics that are getting into our space, that's where they can benefit from this. If you lock down, you bottle up like a hermit crab, you're not going to help the next generation avoid the pitfalls of which you took all the arrows. And I respect and honor the arrows you took, but I'm in that next generation. I know what's coming next. I know all the fights. I know all the wars that we've had in the Supreme Court. You have the Loper Enterprises decision. You have the Heller decision. You have the Cargill decision. All these different decisions that are undermining the main underpins of their gun control are all falling. All the pillars are falling. And you have all of this experience of what they did to you as an older individual, and you can share that with the next generation. That's my whole point. Use it as a positive, and you are a veteran versus a locked in your shell hermit crab. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. I think you find that cynicism not just, maybe for different reasons, but even among, you know, the younger generation, right?
Oh, no, it exists, but it's a little bit more snarky.
It is. And I think it's based on different experiences. But, you know, I guess we could talk about this for hours, honestly. But I only have 40 minutes for my free Zoom, so we're going to have to start to wrap things up.
I get it. We'll do it. You just tell me.
So, obviously some of this conversation is about maybe giving folks a different perspective for them to take going forward. But for those folks who again agree with what you and I have been saying, what can we do to make our voices louder in these spaces where the cynicism seems to be driving the discussion?
In my personal opinion, we have to lean into the next generation and the people who are a little bit different, right? So, and when I say a little bit different, what I mean is a non-traditional gun owner or a non-traditional Second Amendment advocate. And I will say this full-throated. I will stand behind what I'm about to say. Some of the most ardent Second Amendment advocates and supporters that I know are female individuals in the gun space. And the reason that I say that is because they come from a different perspective and they offer a different viewpoint, which will bring more people into the space. And there's a modernization and a different view and life experience that they have. And I'm telling you, from the conversations I've had, every bit of it's valuable. I'm not undermining existing voices. I don't want to come across as everything old is dumb and stupid and not. No, it's a valuable knowledge base. But when we start to unlock that valuable knowledge base in the existing leadership and structure of the Second Amendment community, and we pour into the new leadership and the new generations, you will have a super soldier that you're creating because you're imparting your lived experience into their lived experience. You are now creating a tapestry of this freedom that we're building, not just that was one block over here and this is another block trying to figure it out. Blending it together and adopting a unison is really important. And to that point, the whole thing that started this conversation was that article that was on your website about Harmeet Dillon's interaction in the kind of the rougher space. Honestly, if you look around, a lot of the key demographics that have to happen to bring more people in are younger people, minority people, and women. Those three groups are the ones that are driving the Second Amendment from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. And that's a reality. And we have to be able to bring those people in and pour our knowledge and experience into them versus hold it back from them because we don't necessarily like their grouping.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And this gets back to, I think, the first thing you said, right? We need people. Mm-hmm. And as long as I've been doing Cam and Company, I have been saying, you know, we need to be evangelical about the Second Amendment in our outreach. I don't care if you don't vote like me. I don't care if you don't look like me. I don't care if you and I are complete opposites. It's your right to keep and bear arms too. And, you know, if we consider ourselves, I consider myself to be a Second Amendment advocate first and foremost, right? Above my political leanings. And my 2A advocacy, I think, has made me more of a civil libertarian than I would have been perhaps otherwise. So, you know, yeah, I don't think that we can be exclusionary in our support for the right to keep our arms, right? It belongs to all of us. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't belong to all of us, then as you say, we start going into these purity tests. We start falling into the same trap of the woke left. You know, you've got to be consistent about support for your right, and you should cheer on and embrace people who are not like you, who are exercising their Second Amendment rights, and they understand the importance of those rights. Now, that's the other thing, right? Because there's a difference between being a gun owner and being a Second Amendment advocate.
Oh, 1,000%. Second
Amendment advocate, right? But if we want to grow and inculcate more Second Amendment advocates, frankly, man, I don't want them all to look like me. I don't want them all to think like me. I want, you know, I don't even know if you're old enough for this, but I want a Benetton ad of Second Amendment advocates, right? I want a panoply of people across these spectrums, slice and dice every demographic you can think of. I want them all to be represented in the 2A space because that's how we win.
And that is the next point. And this is the other thing. How long do we have, by the way?
We got at least 10 minutes. I haven't got my little.
We're good. This is the other thing, right? So I very much appreciate and value the broad political fight that's happening outside the 2A space because that the 2A space lives inside that fight. The fight does not live inside the 2A space, right? The broad politicians and the broad electorate has a whole litany and series of things that are important to it. And the 2A is a leg of that stool. It is a part of it, right? It's an incredibly important piece of it. But if you want to start winning and taking the Second Amendment fight directly to Democrats, you take them off at the power. You knock them out of the knees. You literally focus on the things that everyone else is focusing on. And while you still have your important issue of the Second Amendment, which needs to be brought up and advocated for, it can be woven into these conversations versus come over here and check out the Second Amendment when they try to take our gun rights again. And it's got to be part of the broad politic. And the way that we do that is we reach people where they're at. The underlying point that is so crucial, what you just said, from the politics standpoint, one of the things that is not all the way baked into a lot of the decisions sometimes is what is the impact on the broad politic and the overall political implication of bringing in all these different demographics, the young women, young mothers, minorities, all of everything, younger demographics. The second that you start doing that, you defang one of the most visceral emotional attacks the left brings at you of, oh, the gun world is a monolith of old white guys and they hate you because they're, you know, Confederates and they're racist and they're homophobes and they're all boom, 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 boom. It is literally like once you unlock that white guy demographic, it's literally like there's the list of attacks. Go forward. But if you have a completely, totally different heterogeneous population, you've defanged their most vicious attack that responds for the Democrats instantly. Now, what are you going to do? Are you saying we don't like women? Because we have an entire litany of women right over here who are actually, in some cases, I actually recommend you fight me versus fight them because they'll tear you apart. I mean, like, that's an important piece to this. It's all about the political ramifications and looking at the broader fight and bringing more people in to neutralize a lot of their attacks. And that's the way that I look at it. Whole fight, baby. It's a whole war. It's not just a battlefield. Absolutely. Just saying.
Absolutely. Brandon, listen, man, I really appreciate the conversation. I think this was a fantastic. Hopefully the audience enjoyed it as well. And I'd love to have you back at some point in the future, man.
Yeah, dude, anytime. You got my cell phone, just text me and be like, hey, I want to talk about this. And I'll be like, nah. Or I'll be like, absolutely.
Sounds good. Brandon Langley joining us here on the Bearing Arms Cam and Company. And thanks again to Brandon for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again soon. And again, hopefully you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I thought some of the points that Brandon made very important. And, you know, I am not one of the next generation of segment advocates. I'm on the flip side of 50, but I have been around long enough. I like to consider myself to be a young at heart that I recognize those battles that we have fought, even those, especially those that existed before I even came into the two-way space. You know, I certainly wasn't involved in the Second Amendment movement in the late 60s because I wasn't born then, nor was I around and active in the days of Handgun Control Incorporated. When Washington, D.C. put its handgun ban in place, when Chicago put its handgun in place in the early 1980s, you know, I got involved in the Second Amendment fight in the early 2000s, before Heller, but not long before Heller. And, you know, I grew up in a state that, frankly, had pretty good gun laws for the time, Oklahoma. It has really been, you know, going back, I guess, to maybe 2020. When Democrats last took over the Virginia government, passed about a half dozen gun control laws. That was the first time that I lived in a state that actually put more restrictive gun laws in place as a gun owner. I was born in Massachusetts, and of course, you know, but I wasn't around to have to deal with Massachusetts gun laws. And now I am, you know, living in a state that is quickly becoming South Jersey or East California when it comes to our right to keep and bear arms. I definitely understand the importance, again, of bringing in that next generation of Second Amendment advocates, including people who don't think like me and who don't vote like me. And I understand the challenge for, we talked about this actually with David Yamane on yesterday's program a little bit, right? If you're a gun-owning liberal, where do you go? The Democrat Party is not your friend. You know, but from a non-two-way perspective, the Republican Party isn't your friend either. So what do you do? And, you know, from my perspective, and again, we're talking about incrementalism, right? We're talking about long-term goals. If you can get, right now, it's about 20 to 25% of Democrats identify as gun owners, not as Second Amendment advocates, but as gun owners. So the universe of, you know, pro-Second Amendment, Second Amendment advocates who are progressives or Democrats on the left side of the aisle, let's say somewhere between maybe 10 and 15%. if you can get that number, if we could double that to 30% of the Democrat Party, we could get gun ownership doubled from 20 to 25% to 40 to 50%. Then all of a sudden, the gun control lobby has a real problem within its ranks. And they understand this. I mean, if you look at what the gun control groups are doing to try to either co-opt these progressives and liberals who are becoming gun owners, right? Every town trying to get into the gun safety and gun training world. Giffords has their own group of, you know, gun owners for gun control. They are definitely aware of the existential threat that a broadening of the Second Amendment community represents to them. And they're fighting like hell to prevent it. So from my perspective, you know, yes, purely from a constitutional standpoint, we should be fighting for the right of the people to keep and bear arms to be exercised by as many people as possible. But there are also political benefits for broadening the 2A coalition beyond those who we broadly agree with on other issues. So anyway, again, thought it was a great conversation. Look forward to continuing the discussion in the future. Right now, though, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Kansas City. The Kansas City Star reporting a court-ordered man to enroll in anger management course before he allegedly killed a man. So I don't know if he actually attended the anger management course, but 23-year-old Lamar Harris L. is facing one count of second-degree murder as well as armed criminal action, accused of murdering a man named Jose Poole, who, according to police, was trying to de-escalate an argument when he was reportedly shot by Harris L. Over the weekend. It was just after 2 a.m. Saturday when police arrived to, I guess, an apartment complex on reports of a shooting. In the parking lot, they found Poole. He'd been shot in the head, pronounced dead at the scene. They were able to access video footage from the building security system, showed what appears to be a confrontation among several people, including Poole and Harris L., in that parking lot just before 2 o'clock in the morning. In the footage, Poole is walking up to a group of people in the parking lot where the argument ensued. Harris L. was standing next to the driver's side door of a vehicle, and the video appears to show him reaching into that vehicle, pulling out a gun, then approaching Poole, taking what police described as a shooter stance with both hands on the pistol, which was pointed at Poole's face, and then the footage allegedly shows Poole pulling the trigger and striking Poole with at least one round. As he fell, gunman fired two more rounds. Harris L. then reportedly fled the scene. The group dispersed. A witness told homicide detectives that she had met with Harris L., who she was dating, and others in the group earlier that night. They were planning on having a game night, she said, and the woman drove the group to an apartment there in this complex. At some point, she got in an argument with Harris L. and another woman who said she was pregnant with Harris L.'s child. A security guard there at the complex eventually came out, asked them all to quiet down. The woman asked everybody else in the group to just leave. That's when the argument continued in the parking lot, and that's where she said DePoole attempted to de-escalate the situation. She said that DePoole was unarmed. He was not being aggressive, but Harris L. confronted Poole and allegedly shot him, again, according to the court documents. Now, according to the Kansas City Star, Harris L. was previously convicted of first-degree robbery in Jackson County, stemming from an incident in August of 2020. So Harris L. is 23 years old now. Sounds like he may have been a juvenile at the time, but also sounds like he was charged as an adult because he's still on probation for that crime. And if he'd been tried as a juvenile, that probation likely would have ended when he turned 21. According to the Kansas City Star, a Jackson County probation order from just a couple of months ago, actually December 11th, 2025, ordered him to enroll in an anger management course by the end of last year. Again, don't know that he ever did, but I also don't think that his probation would have been revoked had he failed to comply with the terms of his probation. How many times have we seen that before? Somebody violates their probation multiple times, and the answer is, well, let's just extend his probation. Let's just... which I don't get. I mean, if he's not abiding by the terms of their probation, what good is it to say, well, now you're going to be in probation even longer? That is a consequenceless consequence, if that makes sense. Kansas City Star also reports that previously had been fined for disorderly conduct and littering in Lee's Summit, Missouri. Also has a pending domestic assault citation in Lee's Summit from November of last year when he allegedly struck a woman. That may have been what led to the order to obtain anger management. But that case, again, had not been adjudicated. And again, that arrest and citation for domestic assault was not enough to automatically revoke his probation and return him to jail or prison for the robbery conviction from 6 years ago. So right now, Harris L. is being held on a $150,000 cash-only bond. Again, on second-degree murder and armed criminal action, we will see if there are any updates in this case. But, I mean, honestly, he's probably going to get a plea deal. Probably not going to get more than 10 or 15 years behind bars. Time off for good behavior is going to reduce that even further. Maybe I'm the one who's being cynical. Now, we talked with Brayden Langley about the cynicism online. Maybe I'm the one who's being cynical about this, but I've just seen too many other cases like this where, you know, you expect a serious and lengthy prison sentence, and instead you are disappointed because of a sweetheart plea deal. So I hope that that is not the case. Sounds like you already got one of those. Let's hope another one's not in the cards. On to today's armed citizen story, a little bit different than what we normally talk about. South Carolina, Beach Island, fatal stabbing, ruled self-defense, no charges to be filed. Yes, we typically do talk about self-defense shootings here on Bearing Arms, but knives are, in fact, protected by the Second Amendment, too. And this was a case of self-defense on Beach Island, South Carolina. It happened Monday afternoon, around 12:30, broad daylight. Aiken County Sheriff's Office responded to a report of a stabbing. Deputies found a man inside a vehicle and tried to perform life-saving measures. The victim, identified as 36-year-old Michael Harvey, though was pronounced dead about an hour later. The incident occurred at Harvey's home, but investigators previously reported that the incident was not random. Both individuals were known to each other. And the Aiken County Sheriff's Office said after a thorough investigation, the other individual's actions, the individual with the knife, those actions were determined to be legally justified as self-defense. No charges will be filed. So we don't really know the circumstances that led to this self-defense stabbing, which again occurred at Harvey's home. But again, the two individuals known to each other, probably some type of argument, and it sounds like Harvey actually initiated an assault that put the victim in legitimate fear of death or great bodily injury, at which point he used a knife to act in lawful self-defense. But again, if there are more details that emerge from this case, we will certainly bring them to you. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Somewhat similar to yesterday's story of a man who went inside a burning home, tried to rescue that elderly couple. Good Samaritans outside trying to battle that blaze as well. And while the man was not able to get these elderly couple out of the home, first responders were able to do that. And the fire chief praising the actions of the Good Samaritan, saying if it were not for his quick thinking, if it were not for the 911 call that was made, that these individuals likely would have perished in that fire. In this case, a Good Samaritan was able to extricate an elderly woman from her burning home. What's more, the man's dog actually found a surviving pooch there in the basement. Keith Taylor and his wife, Melanie, were driving on Cleveland, Ohio's east side, and they noticed that there was a fire that was visible through the window of a home. So they didn't see the smoke, you know, apparently it hadn't gotten that bad yet, but they could see the flames inside the window. According to Cleveland Fire Lieutenant Mike Norman, Taylor parked his car, honked his horn, and then got out, and he was yelling, "Fire, fire!" As he ran up to the home, he saw an elderly woman in the doorway, but then he saw her turn around and go back inside. Mike Norman said he went up the stairs, went into the house, picked her up, carried her out, And as he came across the threshold, came across the front porch, he said the front porch, the front window just shattered. He said the fire came rushing out. His wife said it looked like it exploded. So the woman is safely out of the home at that point. Taylor's dog, who's a pit bull mix named Ace, started pulling hard on his leash towards a basement window that was boarded up. And at this point, fire crews were on the scene. And Taylor went up to a battalion chief and said, my dog thinks that there's something in that window. So firefighters were able to send a individual down into the basement where they found a small brown dog that had been trapped behind a closed door. Mike Norman, the assistant fire chief, or fire lieutenant rather, said that Keith saved a woman's life, Abe saved a dog's life. It was a great event last Friday. Cleveland Fire says the fire started actually by a space heater. And, you know, that we see so many of those stories every winter. Taylor told Channel 19 News in Cleveland that he thinks God placed him in the right place at the right time, saying, though, that the true heroes are the firefighters who risk their lives every day. And that is certainly the case. But again, being in the right place at the right time, seeing those flames, stopping the car, getting out, going to the door, taking that elderly woman out of the home that was on fire, that's more than just, you know, an average day for most people. I think that is an act of heroism itself. So Keith Taylor, Melanie Taylor, and their dog Ace, all in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. We thank you for your very, very good deeds. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I am looking forward to seeing you again on Monday, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com between now and then. Keeping you up to date on all of the latest segment news and information from all across the nation, whether it's the 12 gun control bills that are now either before Governor Abigail Spanberger or will soon be on Abigail Spanberger's desk in Virginia. The attempt to make FFLs put up signage in New York that is designed to dissuade people from exercising their Second Amendment rights. The ongoing litigation regarding gun and magazine bans. The Supreme Court's conference next tomorrow, coming up on Friday, actually, where these cases will be debated and discussed. And maybe on Monday we'll get some good news out of the court granting cert to one of these cases. We've got all those stories and a whole lot more waiting for you at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. All you have to do is go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, use the promo code FIGHT, and you get 60% off your membership, no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what level of support you choose, whether it's VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum, you'll be able to see all the benefits there. No matter which level you choose, you will be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I want to thank you for that very much because we need all the support we can get, quite frankly. Every organization does at this point in time. And so your support really does matter and does make a difference. So thank you again. Have a great rest of your week and a fantastic weekend ahead. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.